Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we want to stay alive in Toret Chaim, instructions of life, Toret Chesed, instructions of kindness, Toret Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're turned into the inner frequency and higher frequency of blogtalkradio.com. This is Soul Class 490, secular by design, presentation number 40. Blessed is our Creator, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. We're now broadcasting live at 9:32 a.m. here on June 9th, 2015, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Souls. Actually, program content will focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's Secular by Design, a philosophy of Noahide laws and observances, which can be purchased by going to Amazon.com and just type in Secular by Design, a philosophy by Noahide Laws and Observances by Alan W. Cecil. Our call-in number will be for the next 27 or 28 minutes, 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. We're going to turn down the music now to Reb Isaac Vitton, who returned from his wonderful trip to the land of Israel after marrying off his daughter, Orachai Vitton, the week before last. And let's just turn down the music and get to the shoe. Oh, and joining us right now is Rambam teacher and student, the seminary of the teachings of Hanesher Gadol, the great eagle, Rambam, Rav Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides, Dennis Ryan. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning to you, Don, and all our listeners.
Okay. Okay, but so let's get right into it because this is a kind of condensed programming, which we try to do as a public service to share information in order to encourage you to ask yourselves, blessed souls, is there something you weren't taught? And if there's something you weren't taught, maybe it's worthwhile, and certainly worthwhile to expand your consciousness and decide where you fit in this equation, here in the context of promoting and sharing the ideas, philosophies, and matters which are implementable from the seven Noahide or universal commandments. So we're now plucking from the section of Secular by Design, a philosophy of Noahide laws and observances, in the section called Protocols of the Philosopher, and we've been talking about the unfortunate paradoxes and the contradictory attitudes of one Richard Dawkins and also Rousseau, and in weeks before that we dealt with John Stuart Mill as well. So in relation to all of that, let me just get back to that page again. The question to be rephrased is why follow philosophical teachings from men whose own personal morals concerning their own children were so abominable? Should men of great intellectual achievement be held up as standards of religious belief despite their moral paucity? Now, many atheist intellectuals crow about how Albert Einstein, which the very name invokes genius, was an atheist despite his numerous references to God, quote-unquote, inviting misunderstanding by supernaturalists eager to misunderstand and to claim so illustrious a thinker as their own. That's quoting from Richard Dawkins' book, The Blank Delusion. Again, I'm not allowed to use that word that's in the blank. I feel pity for Richard Dawkins, who would associate that word, which it would be, we would fill in the blank, with connection with delusion, when I think he's actually promoting his own delusional thinking by thinking that to think of the Creator as some sort of negative connotation is whatever. I don't want to go any further. I think you know what I'm talking about, blessed souls. And that, and going on, Alan wants to say that Einstein's faith was not in God, but rather in the quote-unquote Enlightenment tradition of philosophers such as Kant and Goethe, which is quoting from another book by another Enlightenment person who has passed on, Hitchens, in his book on page 243. Again, I'm not going to read the title of the book because it's an affront to my faith in the Creator. The atheists chortle about how this uber genius, meaning Einstein, the crown jewel of intellectuals, were firmly in the secular camp, and modern intellectuals thought Einstein was the best example of how a person of superior intelligence does not believe in God. What the intellectuals ignore about, and Alan writes sardonically, what the intellectuals ignore about St. Albert was his personal morality. During Einstein's greatest period of intellectual achievement, he was married to Mileva Maric, a homely but brilliant Serbian woman, she was not of the Jewish faith, whom Albert considered as his intellectual equal. She herself had her own endeavor. She was pursuing a PhD in physics at the Swiss Polytechnic in Zurich when she became pregnant with Albert Einstein's child, a girl named Lisier, or L-I-E-S-E-R-L, Lisur. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. They married after Lisur was born, but the child vanished a couple of years later. Whether she was put up for adoption, dumped in a home for handicapped children, or simply died, we do not know. And although the Einsteins had two more children, both male, the loss of her only daughter haunted Mileva for the rest of her life. That was Einstein's first wife. Mileva gave up her own career in science for the sake of her children and for her husband. There is evidence that much of Albert Einstein's greatest work, including his theory of relativity, was a joint creation with his brilliant wife. As his fame grew, Albert spent increasingly longer periods of time away from his family, and after his affair with Elsa Lowenthal, his own cousin whom he later married and subsequently cheated on as well, he abandoned his family entirely. In Albert Einstein's own words, in a letter written in 1916, he said that separation from Mitzah was for me a question of life. And I guess this is referring to his first life, his first wife, who I guess that was a nickname he gave for Mileva Maric. Separation from Mitzah was for me a question of life. Our life in common had become impossible, even depressing, but I could not say why. So I'm giving up my boys during the 2 years of our separation. I've seen them twice. To my great sorrow, I have found that my children do not understand my actions, that they feel a mute anger against me, and I find, although it hurts me, that it's better for them if their father does not see them anymore. Mitzah is and will always remain for me a severed limb. I shall never again approach her. I finish my days far away from her. And that was from a book by Milan Popovic, The Life and Letters of Mileva Maric, which was published by the John Hopkins University Press, 2003. Einstein's children would doubtless have preferred a loving father who was faithful to his wife and family, even if he had to take off his shoes to count to 20. Comments by atheists such as Sam Harris, who wrote about how Einstein's father considered faith, quote-unquote, nothing more than an Enoch left to guard the harem while the intellect was away solving the problems of the world, end of quote, and that, quote-unquote, Einstein robbed religion of the truth of its doctrine. And this is quoting from Harris's The End of Faith, page 271. makes one wonder what truths Einstein robbed. Albert Einstein, besotted by Western values and mores, was an atheist indeed. So, Dennis, here we see a very, and for me it's a very bitter presentation of someone who I do respect. However, with that being said, historically he is taken to task by Allen courageously, because the truth of the matter is that, you know, many times we've not done the program because we had family commitments. I know Allen himself couldn't join us today because, more likely than not, he's driving his wife, Avalo, to work. A couple weeks ago, you couldn't join the program because you had to be with your wife. This is our community sharing time, Dennis, and we're doing it only because it's not interfering with our family lives. So if you can comment on that, why it's important that if we're going to do something for the benefit of those outside our own immediate circle, it shouldn't be with the calculation of uprooting what we've built as husbands and fathers and to build stable family a stable family culture around our own personal lifestyles.
Well, this is a human condition that exists all the time, Don, and that is you can think one way, but do you practice that way? In other words, what's in your mind may be brilliant, but if you can't handle the relationships with other people, how brilliant are you really? So we look at some people on a parallel basis, and we see that what they're practicing is not what they're producing through their mind. So the question is, can you practice what you preach? And that's been an old saying. In other words, if you believe in the truth and you speak it to, let's say, Albert Einstein with science, is it okay if you lie to your family? But when you speak about a certain subject, you're brilliant. Why? Because you're creative and you don't seem like you're lying. But flip the switch, and what do you practice? Well, that's always been a human problem that's been around for a long, long time. And when you think of that guy, Jenner, he just switched. Well, what is he practicing compared to what he's preaching? But people sometimes say, well, if you're a star or you're really brilliant, we'll look the other way. Why? Because the value of one side of your mind agrees with our thinking. The other side, we say, well, that's the human condition with humans' problems. But yet, what is the whole of a person's being? Are you going to practice what you preach? Do you believe in everything that you tell other people? We never know sometimes, because dark thoughts can be hidden in people's minds, and they can disguise it very well. So this has been going on for a long time, and it's certainly not going to change.
True. But then the point I want to share is that, okay, we know the great contribution. The theory of relativity has contributed not only within its own context, but probably it was the catalyst for eventually what developed into the quantum physics, and ultimately Michio Kaku, who's one of the co-discoverers of what is known as the string theory, would give credit to Einstein. But to me, there was something very unscientific, and I would say dehumanizing, in, unfortunately, we have to say, we're talking about someone who passed on, and may, I guess in the future I'll have to ask from God, and I can ask from God now for forgiveness, even Einstein, at the time of the Great Resurrection, for forgiveness. But at the same time, too, we can learn from his conduct, I would say, how not to act, meaning his scientific endeavors should not have been something that disrupted his family life. As Alan mentioned, we don't even know what happened to his first daughter, or his only daughter, and his two sons. He felt it would be better if they didn't see them. And to me, this is indicative of a sort of self-looping ego, which I'd like to now connect this to, again, this thing with this Bruce Jenner and Caitlyn Jenner, and this is not Blessed Souls, Don Goodman's version of homophobia. It's taking a look at it from a more sobering perspective from the world of psychiatry, which there was an article which Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock shared with me after we did a program Heart-to-Heart Truths into the rest of the world. And I would suggest anyone, you can look it up on Blog Talk Radio and hear our discussion about this. And then Rabbi Goldsack sent me the following article. Dr. Paul H. McHugh, the former psychiatrist-in-chief for Johns Hopkins Hospital and its current Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry, said that transgenderism is a quote-unquote mental disorder that merits treatment, that sex change is biologically impossible, and that people who promote sexual reassignment surgery are collaborating with and promoting a mental disorder. Dr. McHugh, the author of 6 books and at least 125 peer-reviewed medical articles, made his remarks in a recent commentary in the Wall Street Journal, where he explained that transgender surgery is not the solution for people who suffer a quote-unquote a disorder of quote-unquote assumption, the notion that their maleness or femaleness is different than what nature assigned to them biologically. He also reported on a new study showing that suicide rate among transgender people who had reassignment surgery is 20 times higher than the suicide rate among non-transgender people. Dr. McHugh further notes studies from Vanderbilt University and London's Portman Clinic of Children who expressed transgender feelings, but for whom over time 70 to 80% spontaneously lost those feelings. While the Obama administration, Hollywood, and major media, such as these quote-unquote policymakers and the media, are doing no favors, either to the public or the transgendered, and by treating their confusions as a right to need or defending rather than as a mental disorder that deserves understanding, treatment, and prevention, quote-unquote, this intensely felt sense of being transgendered constitutes a mental disorder in 2 respects. The first is that the idea of sex misalignment is simply mistaken. It does not correspond with physical reality. The second is that it can lead to grim psychological outcomes. The transgender person's disorder, said Dr. McHugh, is in the person's assumption that they are different than the physical reality of their body, their maleness or femaleness as assigned by nature. It is a disorder similar to a dangerously thin person suffering anorexia who looks in the mirror and thinks they are overweight, said McHugh. Excuse me. This assumption that one's gender is only in the mind, regardless of anatomical reality, has led some transgendered people to push for social acceptance and affirmation for their own subjective personal truth, said Dr. McHugh. As a result, some states, California, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, have passed laws barring psychiatrists, even with parental permission, from striving to restore national gender feelings to a transgender minor, he said. The pro-transgender advocates do not want to know, said McHugh, that the studies show that about 70 to 80% of children who express transgender feelings spontaneously lose those feelings over time. Also, for those who had sexual reassignment surgery, most of they were satisfied with the operation, but their subsequent psychosocial adjustments were no better than those who didn't have the surgery. And so at Hopkins, we stopped doing sex reassignment surgery since producing a satisfied but still troubled patient seemed an inadequate reason for surgically amputating normal organs, said Dr. McHugh. The former Johns Hopkins chief of psychiatry also warned against enabling or encouraging certain subgroups of the transgendered, such as young people susceptible to discussion or susceptible to suggestion from Everything is Normal sex education, and the school's diversity councils, who, like cult leaders, may encourage these young people to distance themselves from their families and offer advice on rebutting arguments against having transgender surgery. So Dr. McHugh also reported that misguided doctors who are working with very young children who seem to imitate an opposite sex will administer puberty-delaying hormones to render later sex change surgeries less onerous, even though the drugs stunt the children's growth and risk causing sterility. Such actions comes close to child abuse, said Dr. McHugh, given that close to 80% of those kids will abandon their confusion and grow naturally into the adult life if untreated. Dr. McHugh concluded, sex change is biologically impossible. People who undergo sex reassignment surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Rather, they become feminized men or masculinized women. Claiming this is a civil rights matter and encouraging surgical intervention is in reality to collaborate and promote a mental disorder. And before I turn to Dennis and Blessed Souls, I just want to mention again, this is coming from a top-notch former chief of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, and this is not about the decision that Bruce / Caitlyn Jenner made, that's his decision with his own implications. But again, he did that, as he admitted, when he was searching out what his true sexuality was, if that is his, if it is his true sexuality. Again, I throw up a question mark slash form of it's a thought process which is obsessive, and we could also put it perhaps in the category of being compulsive featured, that he would lead to him to change his anatomical organs from male to female. I understand there's one procedure where basically they invert the genitalia and the penis to because they're basically the penis and the vagina are basically inversions of one another. If you learn a little more about the anatomical shapes, they correspond one to the other, and that's where how a man and woman become one flesh. So we're talking about this as someone who did this at the expense of openly admitting, and his children also agreeing with this, his first set of children from his first wife, he neglected because he was overcome by trying to discover who he was, sexuality. And again, this is to me is a sad comment on the superficiality of how we're paying more attention to the aesthetics of outward appearances or inward feelings or sexuality. But after one is fathered children, whether one is has homosexual feelings or if the woman has lesbian feelings, one still has the responsibility to raise the children, whether the person remains married to his other significant or significant other, or the woman remains married to her significant other. This is a very, very serious issue, but it is within the context of the seven universal commandments, which promotes the idea of stabilizing society through happy and healthy family relationships. And if for some reason there has to be a divorce, and that may have a heaven have mercy on those who have to have a divorce, that there's still the need to stay in contact with each other for the sake of the betterment of the children that they had once made a decision to bring into the world. Dennis?
Well, Dr. McHugh hit the nail on the head when he said this is a mental problem. It is. But we in our society today think, or we actually accept, that abnormal replaces normal. So right. If we're accepting this, that means we're saying everybody's entitled to their opinion, no matter how weird or far out their opinion is, because they didn't understand what was normal to begin, or they weren't trained in it. Well, we can come up with 50 million excuses, and that's real nice, but it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. If you're going to say abnormal is the new normal, then you're creating and going along with this distortion when most people know what is correct, what were they taught, and what was the basis for their knowledge. It came from one basic source, and that is the Bible. If you think that the Bible says you can change your gender any way you want, or you can do with the physical form that God gave you, you want to rearrange it? Well, that shows that your ego is overactive, and that is really an imbalance of your mind. So how can, if you have an imbalance and you're happy with that, how can you treat your family or your kids or other relatives without that imbalance? It enters everything, and it just seeps into it. So you don't have a chance to really come back to normality, and you must, and your ego goes along with this, is you must play it out or live it out. Now, you gave statistics. What happens when you try to do that? Well, even when these people seem like they're cured, believe it or not, they still have other types of problems. So you are what your mind says you are because your ego agrees. But you have to take an inventory of yourself from time to time to say, am I normal? Do I have strange habits? Am I following the good book? You got to measure yourself against other things. If you do your own measurement, you're automatically creating a distortion.
Sure. Beautiful. And Dennis, I'd like to thank you for your potent and terse commentary. We're coming to the end of the program, and I do want to end off on a positive note, blessed souls, because this is very painful material to cover. But it's something that, you know, being that Dennis and I are both adults and we're, you know, middle age and past middle age, we've seen a lot of things in our lives, and it just grinds me, it hits me to the core of my existence as a human being that we're placing our attention on someone's gender affinity as opposed to empowering those who are in wheelchairs or blind, and there's not enough funding for them. I hope that perhaps Mr. Jenner or Ms. Jenner, if whatever you want to call him or her, will eventually use this attention given to it, not only to hopefully somehow to prevent other people from committing suicide because of their confused gender identity, but also get involved in acts of charity to raise awareness for those who don't even get the chance to make some sort of decisions about their sexuality, to verbalize it, say to help people who are nonverbal or to help people who are, for the time being, handicapable or, as society might call, mentally delayed. But with that being said, I want to end off on a small positive note, and I also want to correct myself. At the end of Alan's book, that Alan W. Cecil delineated those commandments which he felt which can be integrated into any human society, whether strictly from a theological perspective or secularized, and therefore it shouldn't be a matter of mixing in religion and state. And the first commandment that he lists, which he thinks can be integrated into any human society, is to believe in the existence of the Creator. And also, one of the things that Alan has mentioned in his book, and as well when we've done the program, that the seven universal commandments are not just seven commandments. They're actually seven core commandments which branch out into many other commandments. And I misunderstood Dennis. I thought that Alan. I misunderstood Alan, that I thought he said it was the opinion of Ramban, who was a great scholar of Israel, who said that the seven commandments actually branch out to 209. Actually, it was Alan, from his own scholarly approach, who was promoting the idea that the nations of the world could, in fact, each, according to each society, keep a minimum of 209. And I just want to mention to you, Blessed, that even the Rambam writes that any member of the nation of the world who wants to adhere to the commandments has an option to fulfill any mitzvah he or she wishes. If they have the intention of receiving the reward for it. But I want to talk a little bit about this commandment of the mitzvah to believe in the existence of Creator, based on the teaching in a book called Sefer HaChinuch, literally the book of education, or the book of dedication, which was put together by a Rabbi Aaron Halevi, who lived, I think, about 200 years after the Rambam. I think he's a 14th century scholar. I'll have to look that up to be more accurate, and hopefully before our next program I'll give you exactly when he lived. And he says the following: to believe that there is an eternal one God, to understand that he is the source of all existence, and is from his power and desire, and everything that what he is and was and will be forever, meaning he is the source of past, present, and future. And he took us out of Egypt and gave us the Torah. Now, how do we universalize that teaching? Because it was specifically the nation of Israel. However, this whole idea is Mitzrayim relates this idea of constriction, a constricted consciousness. So when we go out of the constrictions of just normative human intellect and understand there is divine intellect embedded in Scripture and the oral tradition, as it says at the beginning of the giving of the Torah, that I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. This has a universal application, but so, and it's spoken in present tense, meaning at any one point in time we can go out of our normative human intellect, although for the most part normative human intellect is a very functional aspect of the human persona and experience. However, if we just stay stuck in human experience and human normative thinking, we develop a sort of cultural relativism, as Dennis mentioned before. Well, there's normal and abnormal, and then basically what happens is, according to normative intellect, one can get into a sort of discussion experience, where all of a sudden there's no difference between the normality of abnormality, and you can even start to perceive normality as being an abnormality. But the Torah comes out with definite, structured, eternal truths, that this whole idea is that the Creator is the source of all existence. Many people might not accept it. Many people might have doubts. Many people might even deny it. However, this commandment of believing in God is to encourage us not to allow our hearts to be fooled by the idea of us going out of the limitations of human intellect, or normative intellect, and it wasn't that we were just freed from, as a people, the nation of Israel, from another nation. It was that we should be unshackled from that type of deterministic type of thinking, which is actually a high level, was a high level thinking that the Egyptians had, in order that we should understand that there's higher than human normative thinking, which the Creator will give to us and openly bestow upon us as human beings, each one of us, because we have divine image, in order that we can start to fuse super normal or supernatural or prophetic teachings and see what our normative human conscience can do, to see what can we implement into this world to make it a more merciful world, a more loving world, a more nurturing world, yes, and even a more understanding world for the likes of Mr. or / Ms. Jenner, that we will validate her feelings, but we remind her that this, according to Torah standards, is a dysfunctional form of behavior. We're not going to put up a guillotine. We're not going to chop off any heads. We're just reminded, listen, if that's what you're choosing, fine. But do not try to define for us what is normality when we have eternal standards of what normality and abnormality is. You're welcome to make your choices, and we hope you'll be happy with your choices, but don't please try to educate us to tell us that it is a normal thing if you are born anatomically as a man and you have feelings of being a woman, that all of a sudden that means you're actually a woman in the mistaken form of a human being. And that's really questioning if God made a mistake. God doesn't make a mistake, but certainly we can get confused within our normative human reasoning process. Dennis?
You're quite correct, Don. But you got to remember, people who have their ego out of control live in a world of me, me, mm-hmm. me, only me. By doing that, right. you're pushing God away, and you're creating a distance in there, because you believe your ego is greater than anything that God has. So there's no humility in this, yet me, me, me becomes so important, and G-O-D is minimized. So that's your choice, that's okay, but eventually you're going to have to deal with reality. Reality is he created us and everything we have. If you think you can change what he did, you're grossly mistaken.
True. That being said, Dennis, again, I want to thank you for using one of your most really valuable resources in your blessed life. That is to take the last 30-plus minutes to share with me. Again, hopefully tomorrow we'll be doing In Search of Ancient Authentic Torah, program number 491. And I look forward to programming the show tonight. And we won't have to talk about this issue, Dennis, tomorrow, because I think we covered it. And we've given for people to explore on their own more about this issue. Is there anything else you'd like to add as we close out today's program, Dennis? Some sort of nugget of wisdom that people can implement at this moment into their blessed lives?
Don't forget to save a couple of moments in your day to say a little prayer, because God has given you everything.
Amen. Thank you very much, Dennis. And we're now going to segue out to David Dome, our blessed brother, who will help us back home to realize. Oh, I'm a little... You know, I drank juice before the program, but so it's not my usual cup of coffee. I think we'll have to go back to coffee mode tomorrow, because I was a little bit tongue-tied. But anyway, that's okay. We're going to go to and end out the show with David Dome, will help us get back home to help us realize that Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Our divine image will help us get off in scrimmage in the experience, not the game. Life is no game, but so it's a entranceway towards eternity. We're here for our 70, 80, or even 120 years, whether literal or allegorically, according to our 120 years of experiences, and condensed in perhaps to a life of less than 120, maybe 119 and a half years. And even though we are here, we should remember that we are here to do good. Why should we be here to do good, even though that might generate ambivalent feelings within ourselves? Blessed souls, because the Teva Tov Le'etiv is the nature of the good, to do good. And our Creator, our blessed Creator, in His mercy, put us here on this earth to do good. So instead of your fears, as we'll be segueing out, blessed souls, think about blessed souls. Instead of your fears, think about the joy that will bring you tears of joy in this time, hopefully in a way of Ahavachad, one love, Goralachad, one destiny kolano for all of us, Bardachinom, in a pleasant way, Darchisham, in a peaceful way, Laham Shich, to be continued, Bezer Hashem Yisbreak, to be continued with the help of the Most High. And next program, without a vow, I'm going to drink coffee during the program. Take care, everyone.